If the parties are the problem, what's the solution? Leave the parties. Easy for me to say. Tulsi Gabbard lived it. She left the Democratic Party. Was not easy, was not popular. But you have to hear her argument for why. She gets what the problem is. She gets what the solution is. And I believe she makes a damn strong case for what we want in leaders in America, okay? And whether you're going to agree with me about Tulsi or not, doesn't have to be Tulsi, but you got to have people who are thinking the way that she is, which is about you and common concerns and not their own fate within this fealty-based party system, okay? Chris Cuomo here, of course. Thank you for joining me on the Chris Cuomo Project, subscribing, following, checking me out on News Nation. Go into that Substack. Let's keep it up, man. You get the podcast ad-free. You get my whole journey on long COVID. I'm happy to be transparent about it. It's a little embarrassing. It's a little frightening that I got all this funky stuff in my blood, but I know a lot of you are dealing with the same thing. So you go there and check it out. Tulsi Gabbard is a great guest for people who want to be independents because she is now an independent. Be a critical thinker. Wear your independence with the free agent gear. That's why we're putting it out there so we can then use the money to give to good causes, which, by the way, all my brothers and sisters out there who think I'm some kind of Zionist shill, we gave 10 grand to help the kids who are suffering on the ground in Gaza. You know why? Because we care about what needs to be cared about, which is the kids and the innocents suffering. Doesn't mean you back a terror organization. It's that kind of crazy think that's gotten us into the political problems we have. And the solution is to be independent and a critical thinker and not just be sheeple. And that's where Tulsi Gabbard is coming from. So let's start with a conversation about what's happening in the nation, why she made the move she did, and where she believes that politics is both problem and solution. So let's talk about what's going on in the world around us right now. What is your take on why we're seeing this on the campuses? And unpack it for me in terms of why it's happening. Do you think there is a there to something being behind this? And how it's being responded to? What does this mean to you, what's happening?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to say from the outset that free speech is something that we should celebrate in our country. Peaceful protests, protests on campuses across the country. This has been a hallmark of our history and our democracy and the center of what it means to live in a free society where you have an open and thriving marketplace of ideas. So this is not, my view is not saying like, well, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to speak or, you know, that they're shouldn't be allowed to go and go out on the lawn and hold the signs. Like, peaceful protest is important. I think it's actually important in our democratic society.
You fought for it.
Exactly. And whether I like what they're saying or not, that's completely not the point. Free speech should be defended as free speech, whether you agree, disagree, or even find their speech to be abhorrent. The problem with what we're seeing here is that this is yet another example of a complete collapse of just basic law and order, the rule of law. We're seeing these pockets of anarchists. The rhetoric that is coming, not from all, but from some of these people, to call for a genocide against Jewish people, to say that what happened on October 7th should happen 10,000 times over. This is obviously goes beyond the pale when we talk about the defense of free speech. You're calling for violence against your fellow students who happen to be Jewish, or faculty, or people who work at, professors who work at these universities. And the fact that we've gotten to a place in these different cities, whether it's the university leadership or the silence of certain political leaders, including President Joe Biden, that's gotten us to the point where students and faculty and staff do not feel safe on their own campuses. We're talking about Ivy League universities where they pay a lot of money to send your kid to school there and to be told, well, you've got to go home because this campus is not safe for you. It just speaks to this erosion of what should be foundational and common sense for us in our country.
So their pushback is, yeah, then stop supporting a genocide. Stop funding the killing machine that is the state of Israel. And we're just here talking about it. You're actually doing it as a U.S. government. And that's the real problem. Do you believe they are justified in seeing Israel as the bad actor in the Middle East?
Well, let's start with here at home first. Again, they're entitled to their views, their opinions, and their right to express those opinions. Where the line is crossed is when you make it a completely unsafe environment here. You know, their challenging of the U.S. government policy on Israel. Everyone is open and free to be able to do that. You know, I believe firmly that Israel has a right to defend itself. I believe firmly that the people of Palestine, my heart goes out to them for the situation that they are in, that they have been for a very long time. The issue here that people are not pointing out and where many of these college students are falling susceptible to is this radical Islamist ideology that Hamas is putting out. They are saying, I am Hamas. They are saying the Hamas talking points. And this is something that's not only happening here in this instance, obviously it's happening around the world. Mm-hmm. And this is the issue that I wish President Biden was taking on.
Why can't he?
Well, he's terrified.
Why?
Would be my guess. Because he's afraid of being called an Islamophobe. I believe that by the pro-Hamas, the radical Islamist supporters, i.e. the Ilhan Omars of the world, and voters in places like Michigan. People who, and here's the thing, and this is an important thing to point out. These Islamist terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, you go down the list, they have been waging ideological warfare for a very long time. They make no bones about their ideological objective, which is Sharia law and Islamist rule, and you come and be a part of this and you support this, or else you will face the consequences. There must be, and this was George Bush after 9/11. He said, we will defeat them militarily and ideologically, but the ideological warfare never happened.
Will never happen, though.
Across different administrations.
I mean, you went over generation who tried
to
do it.
Here's the thing, though. You have to... Their ideology stands diametrically opposed to our fundamental ideology of freedom and the Constitution, what we're talking about.
Which is why they hate us.
Right, exactly. And this is the ideology that says you can go out and you can criticize your own government. You can go out and say all of these things. You can have disagreements. We will defend that right to free speech. Those freedoms do not exist under Sharia law and this Islamist caliphate that they're pushing for. Because there has not been this kind of pushback, whether it be by our President of the United States or other leaders in largely Western society, including Europe, you've got a lot of kids who are going to school who are not rooted in... And this goes back to, you know, we're not really teaching the Constitution in schools and civics and all these things. So you've got a generation
A third of them aren't sure that the Holocaust is what we say it is.
That's right. And so when you look at that like framework, it's not surprising then that many of these young people are very vulnerable and susceptible to this ideology that it's very intentionally being pushed.
So
going back to your question about why hasn't Joe Biden talked about this? He's either, and other leaders, they're either intellectually incapable of making the argument and drawing the distinction between the radical Islamist ideology being pushed by these terrorist organizations versus the ideology of peace-loving Muslim people, vast majority here and around the world. There is a clear distinction to be made. And combating that radical Islamist ideology with our ideology of freedom, what it means to live in a free society, what we value and cherish, what makes our country unique and different. There's a political thing happening too, as we mentioned, where he's afraid of being criticized by certain elements of his base and that it may cost him votes.
See, I see it as all related, and it was, you know, very special to me to have you now. Because for me, my understanding of what's happening right now started actually with you during the Syrian civil conflict. And I'll tell the story for you guys in a second. But there aren't enough Arabs in this country to determine a national election. But there are enough people who are sympathetic to radical ideology on the far left to make Joe Biden nervous. And I don't see a group of stupid kids.
No.
I see the opposite. I see if fundamentalists and fundamentalist thought can take root on your most educated and actively intellectually curious people, what are they going to do with the rest of us?
Right.
During the Syria civil conflict, which is technically still ongoing, Tulsi was very outspoken about how America better rethink this, okay, and what we get involved in and how, because there's like no good exit for us. Got dumped on all over the place, looked weak, which, and when people were saying, oh, Tulsi Gabbard's weak, I was like, well, Tulsi Gabbard can be a lot of things. She's not weak, that's for sure. So I started looking into it, and what you were tapping into there is, hey, you got to pick what you want to be a part of. And I started to see all this online propaganda that was really persuasive and powerful. And I realized they're ahead of us. The bad guys are ahead of us. Tulsi and the American warriors are going to beat them on any battlefield ever. That's real. But in the digital space, we're not even close to them. And they were propagandizing them about who was doing what in Syria. And now I see it in full effect that Iran, as the head of the snake, through all these proxies, is feeding ideas into the internet. It's like 7-1 on TikTok. False videos of what's happening. And there's plenty of real suffering. But I think that's what scares me about right now. It's not, oh, we can't control our campuses. Yeah, we can. It's that the digital warfare that's going on, what they call cyber war, we're getting our asses kicked, I think. And I think this is the latest example of it, that you have these guys saying we're Hamas. After 9/11, nobody was saying we're the Taliban.
No.
Nobody was saying anything because we didn't have social media, so they couldn't weaponize information the way they are right now. How concerned are you? To me, I see all these connected dots. Like Chris Ray comes out months ago and says, hey, I got to tell you, this Middle East conflict, it's going to cause a lot of trouble at home. And I remember when he said it, I was like, what do you mean trouble at home? You know, you have more Jews than Arabs in America, which is the only place that's true on the planet. He was talking about this. How worried are you that national security now involves idea manipulation of fundamentalist ideas taking roots in America, maybe through one of the two main political parties?
I'm very concerned. We all should be very concerned by this. This is not something new. What's new are the new-ish are the platforms that allow it to spread far more quickly, and to take root. And so, yes, of course, it's happening on social media. As like ISIS was very sophisticated in their push, and were able to recruit a lot of people from the West because of their very intentional and strategic information operation ideological warfare. We have people in, you know, the mainstream media is such like a term that's become normal, but like who's the mainstream media these days? But you look at a lot of people who came from the industry that you left who are, they're not saying, well, yeah, I am Hamas, but they are feeding into this same kind of narrative and parroting some of those talking points that makes it far more widespread, or they're not calling out and speaking the truth for what it is because of that same kind of fear of what will the repercussions be. That's the concern that not only our own leadership here in the United States should have. We should all be aware of this, but really this is the threat that is posed to civilization and all freedom-loving countries. We don't have to theorize about where this path leads. We look to countries like France, who have already had large sections of their country. Now people live there under Sharia law in France.
Persians, Iranian advocates against the theocracy there, they have become huge players online in combating what's happening here, not because they are Zionist motivators necessarily. Yeah. It doesn't really have anything to do with Israel. It has to do with their fear as Americans now that they really believe, and I never really accepted this until like a month ago, by the way, that, oh yeah, this is what happened to us in Iran. Mm. What you're seeing with your campuses and your intellectual groups now, yeah, that's how they did it to us there. Mm. And in my mind, right, you know, transparency.
You're talking about the overthrow.
Yeah. My mind, I was like, no, you guys were always like this, right? Because I'm as big an idiot as anybody, right? So then I go back and I start to read and I'm like, oh, I get it. They weren't always a fundamentalist, theological, Islamist place.
No, quite the opposite, actually.
They are saying, so I start having them on the show because they're like, I'm telling you, two generations ago, this is what happened to us. Was these people came in and we started to see that they were like, the institutions are bad. The institutions are unfair. We have to get back to the only true law, which is God's law. Mm-hmm. And we have to see that that's what the real root of our culture is. And we have to go back to that because it's obvious and real and solid and we can bank on it. And these people are corrupt. We have to get to what is not corrupt. And Allah is what's not corrupt. And they became a fundamentalist state.
Yeah.
And I still believe, I can't see that ever happening here. But I would have never thought that I would see kids with Sadat scarves on, white kids, some of them Jewish, few, but still any. And here they are saying these things that never happened after 9/11.
No.
But it's happening now.
It's, I spent a couple of days with a family who kindly hosted me over Passover, and we were having some of these discussions over dinner. And two things that they said that really stood out to me was one of, you know, one of their kids who's, I don't know, 25, 26 years old, raised the question, are we as Jewish people safe in America anymore? That's a very real and visceral feeling and question that I would not have imagined would happen in our lifetimes. But we can see and understand why it's real and why it exists. And people are looking at how they're going to bring up their own kids and their own families. And you know, the other thing that we talked about was, to your point, about we didn't see this after 9/11. There was a kind of unity across America from people of all races, religions, backgrounds, ages. If that kind of horrific attack were to happen in our country today, would we see that kind of unity, or would we see a group of people saying, well, this was justified, or making some kind of argument? We can have, and you and I have had in the past, and we should have conversations and debates around foreign policy decisions, around the kinds of decisions that our government made that led to the overthrow in Iran that completely changed their trajectory as well as our relationship with Iran. Mm-hmm. We have to understand history. We have to understand how we got here, but also know, okay, well, we can't change the past. So how do we create a better path forward? How do we create better policies forward? How do we come together and say, well, you and I can disagree on something even strongly, but we will stand proudly and defend our right to even have the dialogue and the conversation? That's what concerns me most right now in our country, is that these fundamental freedoms, like the First Amendment, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, a free press, these are things that are being openly debated on some of these college campuses about whether or not it's relevant today and what government's role should be in quote unquote policing free speech. Who gets to be the authority that says, well, I deem your speech as acceptable and your speech is hate speech? This is the America we're living in today. And my concern is if we continue down this path, we will wake up in a country one day where we are not free. We are self-censoring more than people already feel like they have to now. And we the people, won't feel safe even in our own country.
Support for the Chris Cuomo Project comes from Cozy Earth. Let me tell you, bedding matters. And this isn't just me telling you this. In a recent survey, 7 out of 10 parents said that they get an average of 3 hours of sleep a night in the baby's first year. Hello, Greg. Now, mommies need quality sleep, and bedding will matter. There are other variables, but here's one that you can control, okay? When we made the switch to Cozy Earth, I noticed the difference. I did not know that fabric or textiles could really be temperature sensitive, meaning if it's cold, they keep you warm. If it's warm, they can kind of cool you off. I did not know that. I know it now because I have Cozy Earth, okay? So, this Mother's Day, why don't you treat the mamas in your life to the luxury they deserve with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear and prioritize her self-care and sleep health? Doesn't she deserve it? Don't forget, use my promo code Chris at checkout and you get 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Okay? When you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the dropdown. And that will make me very happy. Support for the Chris Cuomo Project comes from AG1. Man, oh man, if you are a listener, you know how I feel about Athletic Greens, okay? AG1 has been a go-to for me for years. Why? It's easier. It's price effective. And it's better. Instead of all the different bottles and how many pills and at what time and in what combinations, they did all the research so I could have complete confidence in my routine. One and done, man. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs. Gut optimization, stress management, immune support. So for me, I really combined all of these different needs into one want, which became AG1, right? Every scoop, probiotics, the digestive enzymes for gut support, magnesium, which is big for me, B vitamins, energy support, adaptogens, they're all in there in the right levels, right combinations to help support immune health. AG1 is the supplement that I trust to provide the support my body needs every day. And that's why they've been a partner for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. If you try AG1, you're going to get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3K2, and you're going to get five free AG1 travel packs. And that's just with the first purchase. So go to drinkag1.com/CCP. Drinkag1.com/CCP. Check it out. I mean, what we have going for us, and this has certainly been a huge part of your popularity base, is it's still a bubble. Most of the stuff that's going on in the media is dealing with the few, not the many. Yeah. You have, of course, introduced yourself to a much larger swath of the country where they're onlookers on this. They are not participants.
Yeah.
Nobody in this country really identifies by party anymore. You know,
yeah, like, I think with the Gallup poll a couple of weeks ago was 43%.
Yeah. It's the fastest growing part of the electorate is a nonpartisan.
Yeah.
Now, are some of them posers? Yeah, because they're forced into a party system.
Sure. And lean in one direction or another. And I get it.
That's okay. Yeah. But I believe that the answer to all of our problems is the party system because it creates fundamental division.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why Washington in his farewell address, which he didn't write, by the way, right? So Hamilton and Madison, you know, you can't, if you're going to have guys working for you, that was a big brain. They worked on the farewell address, right? Because he was thinking about giving it two different times. It was 1/4 of the speech was, hey, this sectarian stuff is a problem.
Exactly.
This North, I don't like it. These parties, they're a big problem.
Yeah.
I'll never join one.
Yeah.
They're trying to force me into the Whigs. I think it's a huge mistake.
Yeah.
That's why I won't serve another term. They want to give me 15 terms, whatever. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Avoid the parties. A small group of men are going to take their advantage over everybody else's. Mm-hmm. So it always happens. He was dead right.
Yeah.
And I believe that the parties, either you need more so that there's got to be sharing in coalitions, or you've got to take them out of the business of running everything because they're only about their own advantage, which obviously became sickening to you, the amount of compromise. Now, you knew and all of your advisors knew that the only rule that's left in that game that's worth anything is you don't quit on the party. You know, it's like it's the only thing you're not supposed to do because they hit you with the But if you do this, Tulsi, then you're going to have these crazies on the right win all the time. So you can't leave.
That is the argument.
Yeah, you can't do this because they're worse.
Yeah.
And you came to a mindset that you were public about, which is, no, it's just all bad.
Yeah.
And this party's not what it was supposed to be anyway anymore. And you left. And it's no, you know, you got big names on the back of your book, right? Meghan McCain, hates me, by the way. Rogan, Tucker Carlson, who I just sat down with.
Was a great conversation you and Tucker had, by the way.
It was only for this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he got a kick out of it because, you know, he gets a kick out of everything. But, and at least I got a little satisfaction that he knew he was being a dick to me all that time. At least I knew that he was seeing it the same way I was. But no Democrats on here. Because you went bad on a team that's not about ideas. It's about tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of them said to you on the, I understand why you did it. I respect it.
Not after the fact. No. Well, you know, Kyrsten Sinema.
Right.
Yes. She went down the same path and became an independent herself. You know, I had a couple of conversations with Joe Manchin that were very friendly. That wouldn't surprise you. But one of the interesting things was that when I was running for president in 2020, it's going back to DC for votes. Obviously, I was trying to bring about the kind of change that I talk about in my book, where I think the Democratic Party and the country needs to go from a governance standpoint. But I was trying to do it from within, and I tried as vice chair of the DNC. Obviously, running on this platform of we need the Democratic Party to be a party of the little guy, bring back the party of JFK, bring back the party of Martin Luther King. And when I would go back to DC for votes, and I remember a one day specifically, you've seen the House floor in like the back corner where the C-SPAN cameras don't really hit. One or two of my former Democrat colleagues would come up and have a little conversation and whisper, I love everything you're doing. Keep up the great work. But don't tell anybody that I said this.
I hate that. Don't you hate it?
But, I mean, but it's like, you know, they see the kind of consequences and wrath and attacks and smears and cancellation that I was going through in real time. And they're like, I don't want any part of that.
No way.
I had people who I was very good friends with, who I got elected at the same time to Congress with. I walk down the street, I see them come. They cross the other side of the street because they don't want to be caught in a picture with me. I was working with one of my colleagues. I think it was like a civil liberties legislation before I left, and my staff talked to their staff. I talked to him and I was like, yeah, of course. Yeah, this is important. Staff talked and his staff responded and said, no, we're not going to allow our boss to be a part of this because we can't allow him to be infected by your boss's toxicity. And so, you know, it got to the point where I recognized I have tried my best within the Democratic Party to bring about significant change. And there is not only no interest, there's a very hostile reaction.
Oh yeah, because it's binary.
Right.
So all that matters is the party.
Right. And but there, I know there are still people there in elected office who have more common sense and who don't like what's going on, but they're terrified and they're not in a place where they're ready to sacrifice their political identity as a Democrat.
Yeah. Cuz that's the common
elected
sense.
Leader.
In truth, what you're doing doesn't make common sense because you can't run if you're not in a party. And they stay in the party because they have tied their fate to the reductive nature of the two-party system, that they're going to ride it till it dies.
Yeah.
And we'll probably die along with it. So you're doing something that certainly doesn't make good sense. You want to run for office. How are you going to run? You know, look at Bobby Kennedy. Now, I believe that you check a lot of boxes that he doesn't. In fairness, as legitimate. I hate that word. I know, you know, and I don't mean to be nasty to him, but he's never held office. You know, he's got a huge name and there's some charisma attributes, but you check a lot of boxes. Nobody thought it was crazy that you wanted to run for president, but it is crazy to run without a party because they dominate the system.
Yeah.
So you can leave very brave. I wasn't surprised because you're a ballsy person, right? Especially if pushed and given an idea that, well, it's not like you're going to leave, so shut up. You know, like that was the mistake, right? So, but what do you do now?
Yeah. I am literally, practically speaking, traveling the country, using every medium possible and available to, I mean, look at the title of the book. It is For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. It's a very clear message. And I go through in the book my experiences throughout my time being involved with politics, throughout my time as a soldier being deployed into different war zones, the experiences that I had, that chapter by chapter, both detail what I see as the biggest challenges and problems and threats that we face today, the Democrat elite's role. And I'm specific to point out the elite versus the party, because I know there are a lot of Democrats across the country, everyday Americans who really care about our country and are concerned about the direction that the leadership of the national party has taken. And most importantly, what we must do about it, we the people. And I'm so happy you talked about Hamilton and Washington. And that's what gives me hope, is when we look back at those founding documents, we look at the vision that our country's founders had for us. They warned us against this hyper-partisanship and both parties or parties having too much power. But they also reminded us of the solution, which is us. It's we the people, not we the people of this party or that party. It's we the people owning the power that's in our hands in this democratic republic, that we get to decide who gets to be elected, who gets to serve in those positions. We have the responsibility to hold them accountable and to bring about our government exists only with the consent of the governed. So if you stay home, or if you park in your little tribe and your little camp and you're not willing to look outside of it or have conversations with people. And I speak to a lot of different groups. I was speaking with a Republican group in Texas recently. And my message was, go out and have conversations with people who would never feel welcome in this room with all of you today. Go out and ask them. Don't say like, well, here's what I stand for. Are you in or are you out? Ask them what they care about. Ask what they're concerned about. What are their hopes for their kids and their families? Actually have a real conversation where you listen. Share what's in your heart. Share why you care about our country and why you're so engaged in politics. We have an opportunity, and I would say a responsibility, if we love this country and we value freedom and we cherish peace, we have a responsibility to come together as Americans outside of whatever party affiliation, even outside of, you know, okay, well, you've got an idea on how we address healthcare. My idea might be different. We're going to disagree. Maybe we, whatever the case may be, our founders disagreed on a lot of things fiercely, but they came together around those most fundamental principles that we find in our founding documents. Our freedoms are under attack in an unprecedented manner right now. If we don't come together and take a stand to defend those freedoms, then they will be lost and I believe virtually impossible to get back.
Who wants to take them?
The party in power, the Biden-Harris administration, the Democrat elite. Because what they see is a free people allowed to think for themselves, speak for themselves, gather information and make our own decisions on our views and opinions on different issues as a direct threat to their power, which is why we're seeing this kind of unprecedented government overreach and abuse of power, where they're saying, okay, well, you know, big tech company X, Y, or Z, these are the people whose accounts need to be silenced or censored. The kind of misuse of surveillance tools within our own government to figure out what's going on and who is saying what, where are they going, what are they doing, using these tools against Americans when we have very real, you know, you look at what's happening in the border. Millions of people coming in from all over the world, unvetted, many of them. I spent a few days down the border in San Diego last month. And one of the things I saw along the border wall, ID cards, passports, government documents being torn up, burned, like all over. I didn't have to look very far. I take two steps, I find another one, another one, and another one. And I saw and talked to illegal immigrants coming across the border throughout the 2 days that I was there. Had conversation, where are you from? Why did you come here? What are your plans? Where are you going to go? And, you know, I'm going to go and there's a woman in Utah I'm going to go see. They come in, they know where Border Patrol is going to pick them up. I saw groups of 20 and 50. I saw groups of 300 or 400. They get picked up. They put in their asylum paperwork and they're on a plane the next day. Maybe they have ID cards, maybe they don't, but there's no way that we have any idea who is in our country, where they are, or what their motives are. Open borders. I think that it's clear there's a long-term political motivation of saying, well, you know, these are people who are very likely going to be on our side. I think they've also painted themselves into a corner where the narrative is if you are against illegal immigration, you are racist. And this was something that we dealt with on the 2020 debate stage, that it became a racist statement for me to stand on that stage and say, we need secure borders. You can't have a nation without secure borders.
I think that's what it is that they have become so tied to diversity. Not that diversity is a bad thing, right? That is our gift, right? You don't get Tulsi
diversity of what, though? That's the thing.
Of it should be of ideas.
Of everything.
That are a
function
of cultural background, right? Because they go hand in hand.
Right.
Not just checking boxes.
Exactly.
What's valuable about you as a leader are your experiences that are a function of your culture, your geography, your gender, all these things. But it's about the value of the ideas that came from them, right?
Exactly.
You can have all those boxes, and you know people who check the same boxes as you, but you wouldn't want them to be your leader. So, but they've become so tied to the idea that any resistance to the expansion of that idea makes you an enemy of the idea. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in the voter packing part. I don't think there's enough strategic thinking in that organization for that. But the problem you're then faced with only rhetorically is, so you're saying the Republicans are better in all these regards.
I'm saying that where we stand today, again, focusing on the fundamental pillars of our country in freedom and in rule of law, in having a secure nation, there is a clear distinction between the two parties where we sit today. I'm not here to say, well, like, you know, there are prominent Republicans who I have and have had very public disagreements with. Recent laws that were passed that increased our government's ability to conduct warrantless surveillance against everyday Americans. That's a huge civil liberties violation that both Democrats and Republicans came together around. And we should call them out for that, the unconstitutional nature of that. It's, you know, the reality is the Republican Party today is, there's a lot of disagreement. When you look at bills and things that are happening in Congress today, there is that healthy tension in that party that I think should be there across both parties, where you have different ideas being debated and legislation that people within their own party may have five different factions who are pushing in different directions. I think that's a good thing.
So why didn't you join that party?
I'm in a unique position to be able to speak from that independent platform and to be able to, I want what's best for our country. That's what I want. And so I want to be able to reach and connect with as many people as possible to help kind of rekindle and relight that feeling of hope that we can come together, that we can build a path forward for us as Americans, as a country. And I want to maximize that opportunity.
But you can't run if you're not in a party.
I'm not running for anything right now. If and when that happens, I will be confronted with that practical reality, but I'm not running for anything.
Support for the Chris Cuomo Project comes from AG1. Listen, my brothers and sisters, you know that I take my health seriously, right? I'm an aging athlete. I'm dealing with long COVID. That's why AG1 is a big part of my game, and I have been taking it for many years. Why? Because it's one and done. I don't have to worry about the combinations. I don't have to worry about the price the same way. It's so much less expensive than taking all these things separately. And it's the deliverability. It's just a scoop and a glass of warm water for me, but you can put a scoop of it in whatever you want. And boop, down the hatch, and that's that. People ask me all the time, AG1, do you really take it? Yeah, it's all over my house. And I've been drinking it for a long time, and I think it works. I have partnered with AG1 for so long because they make a high-quality product that I trust to have as part of my routine every day. So, you want to replace whatever you're doing now? Start AG1. try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and five free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/CCP. That's drinkag1.com/CCP. Check it out. What do you tell people about how to look at what's going on with the former president right now? And all the lawsuits and how he feels about the institutions of the country and what it means in terms of qualification for leadership?
There's a whole lot wrapped up in that, that question. I would just say that, I have over these last 5-6 years started to question things that I would not have thought to question before. Seeing the truth about what has worked in our government and what has not worked, seeing the truth about how in many of these different government agencies, decisions are being made, maybe by elected officials or maybe by unelected bureaucrats that serve the bureaucracy rather than actually serving the people. So broadly, I would say we should welcome that dialogue and that debate about what is actually happening in our government. What are our leaders actually doing? Is it, and this is the basis, the lens I think we should see all of these things through. Is it in the best interest of the American people or not?
Mm. When I look at these two guys, I see it as the bottom. When I look at Trump and Biden, I say this is what America's producing. Like these are our two best choices. I don't see them as equal characters. You know, Trump is hard to beat when it comes to bad character. He's like an outspoken advocate of his own kind of lack of character. But what better argument do you have about the failure of the party system than that this is what it produced?
Yeah.
Trump is the best Republican in the country.
If you look at
Biden is the best Democrat.
It is a failure of the two-party system, and it is a failure of all of the arms of those two-party systems, media, big tech, social media, the big money. The fact that, and again, I experience this in real time in Congress, the fact that you have a person has the ability to write an unlimited amount of money to fund a political party, but for a candidate running for Congress, whatever the limit is, I think now it's around $3,000. Right. And so when that person gets elected to Congress, there is a hugely disproportionate amount of leverage in the hands of the political party to say, oh no, you don't get to vote your conscience. You don't even necessarily get to vote your district. You're going to do what the party wants you to do. And that's a major problem when we look at, well, how are decisions made? They're made to serve the best interest of the party, not to serve the interests of the people who send their elected representatives to advocate for them in Washington.
Are you telling people to leave the parties? If so, if I'm a registered Republican, are you saying leave?
My message right now today is about leaving the Democratic Party, because the elite in the Democratic Party are their actions, their decisions, and their policies are directly challenging and undermining our constitutional rights and freedoms. They are undermining the rule of law. They are undermining our country's security, and we cannot allow them to continue. I would love to see a future where you have people who are independent thinkers, critical thinkers, common sense minded people in both political parties who are actually committed to the Constitution, who will have those open debates and allow that best idea to win. That's not the Democratic Party of today. So in this lead up to the election, I'm urging people to leave the Democratic Party and make their decision on what is in the best interest of freedom and America.
I mean, even if they could get past the allegiance issue, right? Which is like this Jets Patriots reality, right? Where like you hate the other one, even though you don't really know anything about it. The idea of, well, I'm going to leave the Democrats, I'm going to join the Republicans. I just don't get the value proposition.
Well, here's what I don't.
It's like, I'm going to be a Trump guy now?
I don't believe in blind following of any group. It always bothered me for you know, as long as I was in Congress for 8 years and throughout that 2020 cycle, just over and over you hear vote blue no matter who. Like, that's crazy. Is that really the example that you want to set for your kids or the next, like, just follow, be a blind follower. You are a member of the team. And that team spirit was something that on day one, when I got elected to Congress, was made very clear. You are a part of this team now. You will fight for that team. You will not make the other team look good. And that is at the heart of what is wrong. So,
but the other team plays the same way.
Oh, they do. They absolutely do. I talk about that in my book. You know, we went and did bipartisan things when I first got elected. And then at a certain point after week one, it was like, okay, here's your separate rooms. Here's your separate buses to get to here and there. And all of the things that go along with that. Our founders recognized it. That is not what is in the best interest of our country. So it's about putting country first. Ultimately, it's about putting country first. Not too far gone. If it was too far gone, I would not have written this book and I'd be in Hawaii surfing and hanging out with my family. And it is not too far gone, but I am concerned that we are close to that precipice.
What do you see happening next?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know.
I think that anyone who claims to know what the result will be on November 6th doesn't know what they're talking about. We're every day we're waking up to new situations. I feel like we're in an unprecedented environment on every level, and that will have an impact on this election. We have multiple wars either being waged or bubbling up in different parts of the world. Just recently, I think it was yesterday, I saw, you know, we have American service members building this humanitarian aid bridge to Gaza. Of course, we should be providing humanitarian aid to the Palestinian people. We also need to be honest and candid about the consequences of this specific course of action that they are taking. Secretary of Defense Austin was before Congress. He was asked a question about the risk being posed to American servicemen and women. And obviously, if you put them at risk in a war that we are not directly engaged in, and they get either intentionally or unintentionally pulled into it, or harmed or killed in that, then we have a whole other decision point that we've got to make as a country. So they were asking, are they at risk? And his response was, well, we have no boots on the ground. We have no boots on the ground. And I fucking hate that statement because it is such a lie. And this is one example of this. Oh, we have no boots on the ground. Like, okay, you're being dishonest. And this came through in the follow-up question because he said, yes, they could be shot either by a single firearm or by a rocket. Yes, they could be shot even though their boots are not on the ground. And then he said, well, you know, they will be armed and have the right to defend themselves. What are you going to do? And this is where I believe they have not thought through this plan, which speaks to the bigger repetition we see in so many of the foreign policy decisions. They have not thought things through to understand what are the second and third, fourth order of effects. So there's a plausible scenario where you have them building this humanitarian aid bridge. You have people who hate America, Hamas, there. Ever present, and they have already said they will not allow any foreign entity on their soil. Let's say there's a rocket that's fired. Let's say you have 5, 10, 20 Americans who either killed or injured as they are building this, or they're not boots on the ground, but they are killed in this mission that they have been given. What do we do as a country then? What is President Biden going to do then? They will not be in a position to quote unquote defend themselves and fire back. That's ridiculous. So, you know, these are the things, and I don't remember how I got started on this, but the point really comes down to the decision-making and leadership and the unknown. And so in that scenario, you could see very quickly how an unintentional act on our part, a good-hearted act on our part, which I think is not been thought through or being executed well in a way that does not put our country and our servicemen and women unnecessarily at risk, could very quickly spiral out of control into a true geopolitical regional war.
What I didn't understand is, and I know that you can do this because I was talking to the guys from Jordan. Why didn't America say, listen, we can't go near it. There are too many people who don't like us.
Yeah.
You guys do it. The Arab community, you do it. We'll give you all the plans and shit to do it. Not that you don't know how to build a bridge. It's not like, you know, we're rethinking the wheel here. But we'll chip in any way you want. We're just not going to be there because they're going to kill us.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have to do what we do. So you guys build it because Hamas isn't going to go after you guys. That would be stupid for them.
Yeah.
I don't know why we didn't do that.
Yeah.
Unless the answer is because they won't, the Arabs.
Which is a bigger question.
You know,
which is a bigger question.
Everybody loves the Palestinians until you have to do something for them mm-hmm. in that part of the world, you know? And then they come up with these constructive arguments about how, well, we don't want to evacuate them from their own land. No, you have too many Palestinians already. You don't want any more of them. And there is...
And I think they're also concerned about an Islamist terrorist group like Hamas taking root in their own country and their own communities.
Yeah, I mean, right now the Palestinians are like the favorite puppy of the Arab community, but they all treat the Palestinians like shit at every other time.
Yeah.
And I feel like that hasn't come through enough in the sympathies that we're seeing take root in America that like, you know, they're trying to tell you that like somehow these people are a metaphor for how all of the Arab world is treated. No one treats these people worse than the Arab world. But that comes down to leadership also.
Yeah.
And look, I praise you for what you're doing. And I think it's the right thing to do. And I don't see the parties as different in this respect. I understand why you know the Democratic Party better. That's why that was your place to start with your own move and your own argument. You can't make the same arguments about the Republicans you were in the party deeply like that. But I see them as the same. I think that independent is the way to go and to have multi-parties or to find a way to just take the power out of the parties and controlling the elections.
Yeah.
If you could just have open primaries,
exactly.
You'd start to get more reasonable people in there. But the parties control.
Do you think an independent could run and win?
If you remove the party control over the state primaries. Mm-hmm. It's not in the Constitution. It's not really the creature of federal law. It's state by state, and they're all in parties. So they've given the parties... Yeah. All of this fiat within the process. So the answer has to be, well, can you? Yes. Will you? No. But if you were to have all open primaries and to remove the graft system and the job systems that go along with the control of the state primaries for federal office, obviously,
right.
Then yeah. Then you're right back in.
Yeah.
You're right back in. If you can get on the ballots and there's not someone saying,
that's
well,
the thing.
There go all your jobs.
Yeah.
You're never going to get any jobs here again. Then, yeah, you can get in. And it's what the American people want.
Yeah.
What they don't understand is the idea is a lot more attractive right now than the reality because of the party control. But I think what you need to wake people up to as a leader is... They don't have to have this control, you know. We've just given it to them.
That's right.
They don't have any right to it.
That's right.
And the problem with saying that is that they're all in on the game, so they're not going to echo it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They'll, you know, they get quiet about it. But it's definitely the way we have to go because the way it is isn't working. That's the best thing you have going for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody likes the way it is.
That's true.
So everybody's open to change.
Thank you, my friend.
Listen,
so good to see you again.
You are always welcome.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
You're a big shot TV contract.
No, shut up.
But you're always welcome wherever I am. I'm always behind what you're doing.
I appreciate what you're doing.
And as you said, we could disagree 8 out of 10. You'd probably be right 7 out of 8. That's why you're the leader and I'm the question asker. But that's not what's important.
No.
I believe what you're about. I think you're good people. We may have different ideas. Maybe yours are better. I haven't figured it out yet. But you got to get away from, well, Tulsi's bad because we disagree.
Exactly.
And
I mentioned about this Republican event that I spoke at. There is a hunger for that. They weren't taken aback by my message.
Right.
They were saying, yes, like the leaders of that county's party, it was a county Republican event. The leaders of that party asked me, before they knew what I was going to say, they're like, please, please deliver a message to this crowd of 1,000 people that we need to reach outside of our party and actually talk to people. And so I was very heartened to know that mm-hmm. even before, like I was going to say that regardless, it's what I say everywhere I go. But the fact that they were recognizing that this is the direction gave me some hope.
Yeah, it would be nice if they could say it.
You know?
Oh, right? Yeah.
Because they got to be afraid. Yeah. You don't. I think it's brave of you to do that. And it's right for you to do it. So it's worth the risk, in my opinion. We also know that everywhere in life, except in our politics, and I'll end taking your time on this. This is happening everywhere else in your life, except in your political life. You have friends, I guarantee you, where you don't agree with them about
for
things.
For sure.
But it doesn't change how you feel.
No.
And I've said to guys who I fish with, listen, you're loving me here, not just because you're on my boat using my gaff or my gas and my bait.
It's good to have friends with boats.
Right. But if you were to see me as the CNN guy or as the media guy, you hate me all of a sudden, but you know I care about the same things that you do.
Yeah.
And I love you and I'm there for you even if I think you're an idiot, you know, and you feel the same way about me about those things. We just stopped doing that when it comes to politics. And now you got to hate them.
It's insane.
And I say to them, just leave that for football.
Yeah.
You can hate Patriots fans.
Right.
Just hate them. That's fine. Leave it there, though. Not in our politics.
Right.
I wish you all good things.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank you for fighting the good fight.
It's great to see you. Thank you.
You don't have to agree. And if I had gone down a menu list of different controversies and issues, Tulsi Gabbard and I would have our disagreements. But I think she's good people. I think she's coming from a good place. And I believe we have common concerns. If I don't like her answers, I don't have to vote for her. Guess what? And that's okay. You don't have to be enemies. That's why she had to leave the party. Because it can't just be all about us, screw everybody else. It's not what this country can be. If it wants to succeed. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for following. I want to hear your questions and comments about this. I'll see you on News Nation, 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. every weekday night. Thank you for joining the Substack. It's worth the money if you don't want to see the ads, okay? And it's worth the money if you don't want to see the ads and learn about everything I'm trying to do to get through long COVID. I'm going to be posting more and more there about food, movement, right? And the protocols that I'm taking, all these botanicals, about 10 different things a day I'm taking right now. Is it too much? I feel like that sometimes, but my doctor feels otherwise, and she's the one who knows, and you get to learn from her as well, all at the Substack. My friends, the challenges are real. If we face them together, we will face them for the better. Let's get after it.